What the hell is elder care? How are you doing tonight, Jane?
I'm good, Kate. Thank you. Looking forward to our special guest speaker tonight.
I agree. She is an eye surgeon, specializing in glaucoma and cataract specialist. And her name is Dr. Julia Palat. And I want to thank her for being here tonight and providing us with her expertise on the aging eyes, because I know myself, I was diagnosed with baby cataracts. So, Dr. Julia?
Hello, thank you for having me. So, would you like to start talking about cataracts?
Yeah, let's start with
you. Can I just ask you a question? And as we get into cataracts, I think there will be a progression. At what age do you normally start seeing people? Is it in their 50s? Is it in their 60s? Can it be any age that people start to have eye difficulty and say they can't see as well, quote unquote, as they used to?
So one misconception is that you all of a sudden develop a cataract. So cataracts are a progression. So once you're no longer a baby, you have some degree of a cataract, because every year we get older, our cataracts get a little bit more dense. And then in most people, sometime around, I would say, the age of 60, you probably start to become symptomatic from your cataracts, where you start to notice that your glasses don't really correct you quite as well as they once did, even though you keep getting upgraded glasses prescriptions. You start to notice that you are maybe having more difficulty driving at nighttime, noticing a lot of glare and halos around headlights. But this is an ongoing process that takes place over years and years and years. So you have, I'm in my early 40s and I have some degree of a cataract, but mine's just not visually significant yet. So I think that in layman's terms, we may call them a baby cataract, or maybe just don't even mention the fact that you have a cataract. And so then patients might be a little surprised when they come in to see the ophthalmologist and they say, hey, you have a cataract. But really, you've had one all along. It just might not have been visually significant.
Oh,
good
point.
That
was interesting, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And there are some congenital cataracts, or you can develop a cataract from trauma, from steroids. Diabetics can develop cataracts earlier in their lifetime. So I just did surgery on somebody who was in their 30s today because of, different circumstances. I actually had one gentleman today that had got hit with a golf ball when he was young in the eye. And so he had a traumatic cataract that I had to remove. So he was very young, but had a very significant cataract from trauma. And then I had another female patient earlier today who also had visually significant cataracts, probably from her diabetes. So again, you can have cataracts earlier on in your life if you, if the circumstances are such that you develop an early cataract.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't think people worry. This is just my opinion. Please correct me. Don't correct me too often. Correct me. I think people feel okay, if you will, about cataracts, because they can be surgically repaired and they can be fixed. Mm-hmm. I think what people worry about is, without a doubt, macular degeneration and the two different kinds, and also, glaucoma. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of people, and are you diagnosing that frequently?
So I agree with you. So I agree that cataracts aren't as scary for most people because, like you said, we have an easy surgical fix for this, where we can restore people's vision. So I do think that patients are a lot more worried about a macular degeneration or a glaucoma diagnosis. Now, I've spent my entire career in a tertiary care environment where, because I'm a glaucoma subspecialist, so almost everybody that I see on a daily basis has a glaucoma. So I'm not a general practitioner. So I'm not a general ophthalmologist, where I see, you know, the dry eye, the red eye, you know, a diabetic exam. So almost everybody who comes through my door has glaucoma. So my view of the world's a little skewed. But in general, glaucoma is the second leading cause of blindness worldwide. As our population is aging, we're going to have a much higher prevalence of patients who have glaucoma. There are certain, and as you mentioned, there's two types of glaucoma as well. There's open angle and closed angle, just like you mentioned that there's two types of macular degeneration, which is dry and the wet. But there's certain risk factors for glaucoma, and glaucoma tends to be hereditary. So if you have somebody in your family, especially close family relative who has glaucoma, you certainly should start getting checked, 20s, 30s, because the incidence of glaucoma increases after the age of 40. So the earlier you get diagnosed with glaucoma, the better the outcomes. There is no cure for glaucoma. So once you have damage from glaucoma, and by the way, glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerve. So once you have damage to the optic nerve, that damage is permanent. So we have treatments to try to stabilize the disease, to slow it down, but there's no treatment to reverse the damage. So the earlier you can get diagnosed, the better your outcome will be. So that's as far as glaucoma goes. Now, macular degeneration, again, being in a tertiary care environment, I do see a lot of people with macular degeneration as well. The difficulty with macular degeneration is that it tends to affect your central vision, as opposed to glaucoma, where the vision that is affected first typically tends to be peripheral vision, and then it works its way toward the center as the disease progresses, whereas macular degeneration affects the center of your vision. So that central vision loss can be very devastating. With regard to the different types of treatments for the different types of macular degeneration, there's not a lot for dry macular degeneration. So what I would recommend for patients who are hoping to prevent macular degeneration, certainly smoking has been shown as a very big risk factor for macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. So if you're hoping to prevent the development or slow down the development of macular degeneration, stop smoking. Eating a healthy diet with lots of green leafy vegetables may be helpful as well. And also protecting your eyes from UV damage. So wearing sunglasses can also be helpful. Once you do have macular degeneration, if you are still a smoker, certainly stopping smoking will help. There have been multiple studies done on dietary supplements to see whether that can help to stabilize or slow down the progression of dry macular degeneration. And it's been found that the intermediate or advanced stages of dry macular degeneration can be stabilized or helped by taking these vitamins. So those vitamins are called AREDS vitamins. So, or there's a couple of brand names of these vitamins. So PreserVision, Ocuvite, for instance, are some that you can buy over the counter. They have not found a significant benefit to patients who have mild macular degeneration. However, Recently, there's been some studies on some injections for a very advanced subtype of macular dry macular degeneration that has geographic atrophy as a feature. I don't have a lot of personal experience or knowledge about this because it's not my area of expertise. But if you do have significant macular degeneration findings, seeing a retina specialist is certainly warranted. With regard to wet macular degeneration, that's when you have leaky vessels that create fluid pockets under your retina, which is kind of the film in the camera of your eye, if you want to call it that. And that subset of macular degeneration tends to cause more visual distortion, but there are treatments for this. So there are injections that you can get in your eyes that are anti-VEGF. So it's a molecule that helps to kind of shrink up and get rid of leaky vessels, which is the cause of the fluid that you get in wet macular degeneration. So it kind of dries up the fluid and helps to restore a more normal architecture of the retina so that you can restore some of your vision if you have wet macular degeneration. And again, that treatment is typically administered by a retina specialist. So if there's any concern for macular degeneration, especially more advanced or the wet kind of macular degeneration, you should be seeing a retina specialist.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Of course, I have 95 and then we'll tune in tomorrow morning together. I was surprised. Of course, what do I know? But I didn't know glaucoma was mostly genetics.
A lot of it is genetics.
Yeah, that's interesting to me.
See, I didn't know that either. That's interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah, so there's been actually a number of genetic studies. There's a huge study called the Neighborhood Study. It's a multi-center study looking to see if they can identify various genes that are responsible for glaucoma. And it seems that there's not just like a single gene, it's a spectrum of disease. And so, they keep identifying, different alleles and different genes that are believed to be responsible for glaucoma. But at some point, you might be able to get a blood test and determine, hey, I have this predisposition for glaucoma, and maybe you'll be able to be treated before you ever have any signs of glaucoma. So that's something, I think that's the hope and goal of all of these studies. But certainly it does run in families. So you should definitely get checked if you have someone in your family.
And I think what is the test called where you put your head in there and
visual
your chin
field.
Has
Correct.
To be, and then a puff in the eye?
Well, the puff in the eye, that's to check your eye pressure. So the puff test is the most inaccurate way of checking an eye pressure.
Isn't that interesting?
Okay. There's a variety of ways to check the pressure. The puff test is one of the most inaccurate. There are some handheld devices that are a little bit more accurate, but again, what is considered the gold standard is Goldman applanation, which is a little tip that's attached to the slit lamp. So when you put your chin and your forehead into the slit lamp, when you get your eye exam, it's a little attachment where they put the little yellow dye in, and they with the blue light, they check your pressure. So when you have your pressure checked that way, that's considered the gold standard and the most accurate way of checking your eye pressure.
Okay, so it's not the puff test.
Okay.
Understood. I did not know that.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerve. It has characteristic optic nerve findings, so structural findings, as well as correlating visual field findings. So when I look at somebody who I am evaluating for glaucoma, their eye pressure is actually only a risk factor. It's actually been removed and is no longer found in the definition of glaucoma. So I can have somebody with a pressure of 30 who never develops glaucoma. And then I can have somebody with a pressure of 10 who has severe glaucoma. So pressure is the only modifiable risk factor that we have. So we treat the eye pressure and try to get it as low as possible to stabilize the disease. But you can have any eye pressure and still have glaucoma. So what we actually look for are these characteristic structural and functional changes. So what I thought you were going to mention is the visual field test.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best method we currently have of checking functional vision. So determining whether there's actually any visual field deficits. And then I think the most frequently utilized tool for looking at structural changes is something called an OCT, which is basically gives you a picture of the optic nerve and looks at the tissues around the optic nerve and their thicknesses, and it compares your thickness to age-matched normals to see if you've lost some tissue relative to people who are deemed normal in your age category.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Interesting, for
Didn't
sure.
Know that.
Can I ask you another question, please? Just, it may not be truly your specialty, I
sure.
understand, but I think in terms of our listeners and the aging process, floaters
mm-hmm.
and flashes.
Mm-hmm.
People just feel like they have all these floaters the minute you turn 65 or 62. Floaters are normal?
90% of the time, yes. So floaters are very annoying. And again, it's kind of like cataracts. It's a normal part of your aging. So everybody eventually develops cataracts and floaters if you live long enough. floaters typically develop because behind your lens or the cataract is this jelly. So it's called the vitreous jelly. And as we get older, that jelly starts to liquefy and form little pockets of fluid and starts to contract on itself. And those pockets of fluid cast shadows on the retina, and that's what you perceive as a floater. And because, again, it's like a little, it's a jelly slash or a liquefied jelly, so it kind of moves around in your eye. That's why you see the floater, you look one way or the other, kind of floats around. So those are floaters. And I said it's 90% of the time, it's annoying but normal. And 10% of the time, it can be an indication of a problem. So as that jelly contracts, it starts to peel away from the retina. And so those flashes of light that you were talking about is because that jelly is very tightly adhered at certain locations within the eye. So one of those locations, for instance, is the optic nerve. It's tightly adhered to some vessels. And so as it wants to peel off, it's going to tug on the retina as it's peeling off. And what you see as a flat, that tug is what you see as a white flashing light. And again, this is a normal process. 90% of the time, it's really annoying. You might see the spider web in your vision and you're wondering what is going on. And eventually, in most cases, it peels off and your brain learns to ignore it most of the time. A lot of patients perceive or notice their floaters more on nice, sunny, blue sky days or against light backgrounds. But most of the time, they can kind of not, you know, ignore the floaters. 10% of the time, as the jelly is peeling off, it's so tightly adhered and is tugging so much that it can actually either tear the retina or detach the retina, so pull it off with it. Mm-hmm. And so that happens about 10% of the time. And so what you might notice is a shower of floaters, so a bunch of little black dots that are like a ton of them all of a sudden. You might notice that instead of having an occasional white flashing light, all of a sudden you're having tons of them and they're getting more frequent. And then lastly, you might notice a curtain in your vision where you, and that curtain can come from any direction, but basically you still see fine on one side of the curtain, but on the other side of the curtain, it's kind of black. So all of those three symptoms are the main symptoms or signs that you might have developed a retinal tear or retinal detachment. And so if you see that constellation of symptoms, or basically an acute change in your floaters or an acute change in your flashing lights, you want to call your eye provider and be examined relatively quickly to see if all of a sudden you have a tear or a detachment, because that can be fixed. And the quicker you can get it fixed, the better the visual outcome.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to go back to glaucoma again. I'm sorry.
Because
you're a specialist. What's the treatment for glaucoma? You might have mentioned it, but if you could just repeat again.
Sure. So there's two types of glaucoma. There's closed angle and open angle glaucoma. Closed angle glaucoma tends to affect women more often than men, because women tend to have a smaller eyeball. Certain Asian populations, so the Chinese population, tends to be affected more as opposed to the Japanese population. The Inuit population is actually at the highest at risk for this happening. Again, because of the relative size of their eye, patients who are farsighted are also at risk for developing closed angle glaucoma. And the reason that you develop this is that you're in most cases of primary closed angle glaucoma is that your cataract gets bigger and bigger every year and takes up more space in your eye relative to the other structures that need to be there. So it kind of pushes the iris forward, and the natural drain in your eye sits right in front of the iris. So if the iris gets pushed forward far enough, then it actually closes off the natural drain in your eye, and your eye continues to produce fluid, but it has nowhere to go. So all of a sudden, you have an acute rise in your eye pressure, which can be very painful, can cause permanent vision loss, and that's an acute angle closure attack. So typically, we like to see patients before that happens. So at every glaucoma evaluation that I do, I look at the natural drain of the eye, and I see how much of the drain can I still visualize. If I don't see enough of the drain, then I tell patients, hey, you're at risk of, closed angle or developing closed angle glaucoma. Then I can discuss, there's typically two options for treatment for this. Mm-hmm. The first is a laser procedure where we basically poke a hole in the iris, which is the colored part of the eye, and that allows for an alternate pathway for the fluid to go. So the fluid is produced behind the iris. It has to flow around the iris and then to the drain. So we punch a little hole with a laser in the periphery of the iris so that that fluid can continue to drain if the natural drain is too narrow or is closed off. I usually like to offer that form of treatment to my younger patients who might have a bulky cataract, but it's not visually significant yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate treatment is cataract surgery, because when we do cataract surgery, we remove your big, bulky, cloudy lens. We replace it with a thin plastic lens. And so all of a sudden, that bulkiness is gone, and so your iris can fall back into its more natural position, and as long as you haven't formed any scar tissue in the angle, then your angle, your natural angle structure is restored.
Mm-hmm.
So that's closed angle or narrow angle glaucoma. So the second type is open angle glaucoma. So the drain of your eye might be open, but it's not functioning the way that it should be. So again, the eye is producing fluid, but your natural drain is not able to keep up with that fluid production. So slowly over time, your eye pressure rises.
Mm-hmm.
And the treatment for this is traditionally has always started with eye drops.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in the past, there was maybe one class of eye drop medications. Now we have five classes of medications that we typically use. And but there's pros and cons to the drops. I think a lot of patients, a lot of our patients especially, are elderly, so it is hard for them to administer eye drops. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of patients might have arthritis, so actually squeezing the bottle is difficult. Drops are expensive because this is something you have to use for the rest of your life. So having a monthly copay for the rest of your life on, you know, 1 to 4 bottles of eye drops can be costly. Because our patients are elderly, they might forget to put their drops in every single day. And some of the drops have to be administered 2-3 times a day. So we find that compliance with eye drops is very poor. And also it can cause a lot of dry eye and irritation as well from putting in all those drops. So in more recent years, doing a laser treatment called SLT or selective laser trabeculoplasty has become more of a favored treatment as a primary treatment option for glaucoma. And what this does is it treats the 360 degrees of the natural drain, basically inducing your own immune system to kind of come up and clean up the drain to see if it can function a little bit better again. There's been a lot of studies done on this. It is not necessarily effective for 100% of patients, but for those for whom it is effective, it can provide a very nice pressure reduction without having that monthly copay, without having to rely on the patient to administer the drops. So I know I did the treatment. I know that this treatment is working, and I know I don't have to worry whether the patient goes home and actually uses their drops or not. Mm-hmm. This laser does, the effect of it does wear off over time, and it can be repeated. So that's another nice thing about this treatment. And then the last type of treatment for glaucoma is surgery. So in the past, there was only one type of surgery we could do, which is called a trabeculectomy. And however, over the last 15 years, I'd say there's been kind of a renaissance in terms of more minimally invasive glaucoma surgeries. And we now have a lot of options available. So we can do a lot of minimally invasive glaucoma procedures that work on the natural drain of the eye at the time of cataract surgery, for instance. And that can sometimes help delay the need for bigger surgeries, such as the trabeculectomy or a surgery where we basically put a new drain in the eye. There's a few different types of devices, but the general name for those is like a glaucoma drainage device surgery, where we bypass the natural drainage system in the eye.
Oh, I'm just taken by all of this.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. I just understand how important it is to care for your eyes. I mean, there are some things that are out of your control.
For sure.
You know?
Correct.
But it sounds to me like medicine has come a long way in the treatment of these three.
Correct. There's definitely a lot more options nowadays than there was 10, 20 years ago. I think the most important thing is early diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So making sure you go and see an ophthalmologist and get your eyes examined, I would say annually, is ideal. And if you do happen to be diagnosed with one of these disease processes, you might need to see your eye doctor more frequently. But I think for screening purposes and just making sure that that you're taking care of your eye health, seeing an eye doctor at once a year, like you see your PCP, is a must.
Okay. And wear sunglasses.
Yes.
And don't smoke.
And don't smoke.
Stop
and don't
smoking.
And don't smoke, right.
That's right. That's key for a lot of things. So keep those lungs healthy and your eyes So, well, do you have any other questions,
Well,
Jane?
I just have a real quick one before we wrap up. Sure. Of course I do.
Because I know.
Did you look at the eclipse or not? Worried about your eyes?
I did not. I was working.
But she was doing surgery, saving other eyes.
But my children did, and they had the special
Did they have the glasses?
They did. Well, they did. They absolutely did.
Her daughter loaned me a pair.
Okay.
And I got to see them. I get to see it.
Did you?
In my backyard. Yes. Yes. It was wonderful.
Did Lila give you a pair?
Sarah did.
Oh, Sarah did.
Sarah
wow.
did. Yeah. Okay. She did. She did a great job. So most appreciative. But I can't thank you enough for being here and educating us because, you know, I'm always concerned, you know, with being diagnosed with this baby cataract was like, my God, I'm old now, because that's the first thing you think of, right, is that age. But it can affect younger individuals.
For
so
sure.
It's really not an age thing anymore to define that you're getting older.
Well, it's definitely age related, but there are other there are other causes that can expedite the process. Let's
true.
Say that.
Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I appreciate all the information, and I promise I won't get paranoid and start calling you with every single thing, you know, with my floaters. You know, it's I'm reading, and all of a sudden I went, was that a bug really, or was that a floater, you know, against a white background?
Yeah,
just
right.
exactly what you said, and I got a couple floaters going on. But thank you so much
Thanks
for
so
the
much
information.
Time. Yes, we appreciate it. And our next podcast, we're hoping to do mental health and loss. And then we have a few other topics coming your way. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And what are you going to quote tonight there, Jane?
I usually like to quote women. I'm a little biased, but I will quote John Glenn tonight.
Okay.
If there is one thing I have learned by being on this planet, is that the happiest and most fulfilled individuals are those who can devote themselves to something other than themselves and be more profound in their needs and not just self-centered needs.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And on that note, have a good night. Thank you.